You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Noble and Roosh Show, brought to you by Ball is Life and Dash Radio.
What are your thoughts from game four?
Maples came in here melting with Drew Holiday's just madness. And I said last year, I constantly said, and I still say it, the Bucks are one of the most talented championship teams, but the dumbest championship team of all time. Like their IQ is awful. And it's still showing today. Like the meltdown in the end were just IQ mistakes. And I don't know, man. I don't think it's ever going to get better for these guys, but I just don't think any of them are very intelligent basketball players. It's just talent.
Yeah. Hold up.
You don't think they're intelligent basketball players? So what do you think Giannis is?
Really freaking talented and big and dominant.
Okay, sure. Yes. I mean, I won't go that far. I just think, you know, Drew Holiday, I think that team is, the thing about the Bucks is, I said this series, they're going to do what they're going to do defensively. This is in my series preview. They're going to do what they're going to do defensively. The Celtics' success is going to come down to a couple things. One, how well their big shoot the three. Horford's shooting the hell out of the ball because the Bucks' mantra is, you aren't getting nothing in this pick. So if you watch on Horford's pick and pops, absolutely nothing. Nothing outside, nothing inside. Nobody's closing out to contest his threes.
He does get some baseline jumpers, but that, yeah. I don't think that's the shot he wants.
Yeah, but the threes, they're all going to give. He's shooting above, like, high 40s this series from three. So that's a plus. And that's really helping them out. They're stretching the Bucks kind of thin defensively. And the other end is they got to control. I think this is the Bucks. We're leading the playoffs in quality three-point attempts, wide open, you know, 6 feet open. The Celtics defend the three-point line better than anybody else in basketball. I thought the Celtics had to win that matchup to have a chance. So far, they have. They've limited, after game one, they've completely limited the wide-open three-point attempts and Horford shooting the hell out of the ball. And I think that's the two main things why this is a series. Like, Giannis is going to get his 30, whether it's on 25, 30 shots, but I think the Celtics are really limiting the quality threes and Horford shooting the hell out the ball. And that's really making this a series.
Statistically, Horford is 14 of 28 from three on the series. That's 50.
Yeah, see, so that's you know, and they're going to keep letting them shoot. That's because that's the Bucks' defense. Bud does not like to change his defensive style. He said, we're going to sit in this drop, nothing in the paint. If you make them, God bless.
And what you just said, so last season, and look, back to the whole conclusion process discussion. Last season, people forget, in the second round of those playoffs, Mike Budenholzer's job was on the line. That man was
sounding like Doc Rivers right now. That's what the dialogue we got going on.
Right. And then all of a sudden he wins it all and he's good, right? But you're seeing it again. Like you just said, the Bucks are stubborn. They do what they do. And like Zach said, I mean, their shot selection is like sometimes Drew Holiday will just pull up. He hit one in the first quarter. It was like 16-11. He pulled up, hit a three. As soon as he pulled up, I was like, that's not going in.
Right.
Dropped it. And I was just like, okay, I guess. But, you know, like, it ain't going to continue. So
even backing down, once he gets past the nail and he just does a little whoop-de-whoop and it's like, it leaves it short. Like, there's no confidence in the shot. It's like, what are we doing, man? It's like, do I kick it out? Am I going to finish? Am I going to make a move down here? Or what's the offense we're running? And I just think, just even looking at from the numbers, like, basic numbers, like, you can tell the Celtics, when they're rolling, they're moving the ball. And it's been the same way all year. It's like a switch turned on. These guys Jason Tatum's playmaking constantly gets better and better. Jaylen Brown is kind of who he is. I don't know if that's ever going to get that much better, but like Derek White, Marcus Smart really been enabled from a playmaking set of things. But just when they're
Derek leading, White's been helpful.
Oh, I love him. He's been great. But when they're leading and dominating in assists and the ball is moving and then they're getting second chance points and getting these guys open, it's tough to beat. And that's what makes these guys whole in who they are. But Maples, how do you see the rest of the series looking? I mean, I think it like what you were saying on Tatum versus the rest of the guys. I mean, yeah, keep slowing down Tatum and let the other guys try to beat you because I think those guys are easier to scheme. You know, I think they're easier to like, it's the same that's going for Luka. I mean, let him get his, and you can't let all these other guys go off, you know?
Yeah, we're not there. We haven't discussed that yet, but I was shocked that Phoenix's, you know, switch of strategy there. You know, they let, like, I was like, why are you going to let those guys get in the shooting gallery? You know, Luka's thing, I think the Clippers did a great job. It was like, you know, we're going to trust guys to play him one-on-one. He's a great player, but we're not letting anybody else get off. And he beat him a couple games, but same thing 2 years ago. He ran out of gas. It's hard to carry through an entire playoff series. It's hard to carry. And I think they just, like, you got a 9-for-25 game from Luka. Yeah, because you sent more help, but he's probably one of the top five playmakers in basketball, if not, you know, if not the best. So he's making reads, and guys are getting wide open looks because of his playmaking. So I think Phoenix has to go back to kind of make Luka, you know, he's going to get his 40, guys. We got to live with that. But we just, you know, Dorian Finney-Smith, 12 wide open threes. He makes 8. I mean, at some point, I mean, you can't keep giving that up. That's killing you.
So I agree with you. The book has always been that one guy is not going to carry you there, you know, not for a series, maybe a couple games. Which is why, again, yeah, I agree. I don't understand why they're not just like letting Luka eat and then shutting everyone down, especially because it's all rhythm, right? When you're a role player, catch and shoot, it's all rhythm. And if you have no rhythm, chances are you're not going to catch that rhythm out of nowhere. So the Bucks tonight, the Celtics won the 3-point line, 14-37. Bucks, surprisingly, were 9-27. Bucks won the free throw attempts, 21-27. Celtics, 18-20. Boston had 25 fouls called on them to Milwaukee 17. So my point about refereeing, I mean, that's basically like what, one third more. I can't do my math on the fly, but that's a lot.
I think you got to, you know, again, like we're talking, you know, process versus conclusion. The Bucks put a lot of paint pressure, put a lot of rim pressure on the floor. The Celtics, the way the Bucks are set up, they packed the paint. There's going to be a lot more jump shots, but you know, because I know the Celtics shot a lot more free throws in game three. So, they got a lot more in game three.
They did. And they lost the game.
Yeah.
which is interesting.
Correlate free throw attempts with, because watching the games, like I truly think there's game changing calls. Like I really.
By the way, Maples, a Noble and Roosh show tradition is take a shot every time Zach says he truly believes something.
I don't drink, but I'll get some cran apple juice though.
There we go.
You go get some diabetes by the end of the episode.
Take a hit. No. So I think the home team's been incredibly favored throughout the entire playoffs. And it's been this way for the past couple of years. That's why I don't mind how bad the referees have been, because every home team's been really favored. And it's not necessarily free throw attempts. Usually it is, but just watching every game, it's like there's some really obvious calls they're doing to try to make the home team win. And I believe this.
I mean, when you make gambling an essential part of, you know, your sport, you know, it becomes a question.
Yes.
The NBA has like definitely gotten bad with the gambling. You know, you see the FanDuel and the other companies, the commercials. So they're in bed with the gambling thing. So when that stuff happens, it's fair to question what you're seeing out there.
It just questions my life that I'm giving so much to this game that it's rigged, you're saying.
I'm not rigged, but there's it gives you pause to ask questions.
I agree with that. And you know, I was thinking about this. I've been thinking about this a lot recently because it's really been pissing me off. If you've read my tweets, you might be able to tell. It's really been pissing me off because it's like, it feels like it's just bastardizing the game. Like, I want to watch hoops. I'm a diehard basketball fan. But when I watch these games, I can very quickly and easily see how a casual fan is just like, this is a waste of my time. Like, wake me up with 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, you know? So I don't blame them for that. And I'm thinking about it. I'm like, yo, does any other major sport have anything as easy and valuable that is given away like candy as a free throw? You know, in baseball, when umpires miss, you know, balls and strikes, like someone walks and gets on base, but you still got to bring them home. You still got to hit.
Pass interference.
Pass interference is one, but that's so few and far between. Like, there aren't, you know, what, in game three, Boston shot 34 free throws. There aren't 34 pass interference calls per game. You know what I mean? There's like three ones.
They're more crucial when they do happen.
Yeah, but they're like, it's timely, right? This is like four quarters of just this. You're just giving away points. So like teams can go cold and just, look, I watched James Harden go, you know, 5 of 24 and 17 to 17 from the free throw line, and we still won games. You know, like, I saw it. So, but what football, you know, hold, like in football, you still got to get down the field and convert. So I've really been thinking, like, are free throws overrated? Not overrated, but are they, I don't know, does something have to be done about free throws? Is there some type of tweak? Is there any tweak that we can make? Because I think it kills the heart of the game, and I think it's killing fandom.
People have really wanted to throw out the idea of, if you get fouled, you get what is the rule? You get one to keep the play going, or it's you get the basket and the ball, like one free throw, and you just don't even shoot them or something. Like, I've heard a ton of different ideas when it comes to free throws.
That's even worse. If you get free throw, it's like a technical.
It's either you make the one, you get 2 points for the one, or you get zero, that sort of thing. But yeah, just really weird scenarios, and it would help the gameplay for sure. And you're not waiting 10 seconds for Kyrie to do whatever dance he does and Giannis to.
Well, that's why I blame the refs. Back to the whole Giannis thing. That's why I blame the refs, because if you're a player and this directly applies to Harden, right? Like Maple said, drawing fouls is a skill. If you're a player and you realize, hey, if I just like bump this fool and kind of flail, like I'm going to the line, why wouldn't you do it? You know what I mean? Why not? So it's the league. The league has to crack down on it, but they want points.
See, that's why my favorite player is Brandon Ingram. You feel me? No pure score. We don't, you know, four free throws a game. Still get that 25, man.
There you go.
That's why his ceiling's capped, Maples.
It's absolely not. If you still stand after what you saw in the playoffs, you just being a hater. There's no
way
you
still. That's the next level, though. Free throw baiting. That's the next sphere.
See what you say? That's what's wrong with the game. You
see that? I feel you.
I agree.
No, so, Maple, it sounds disgusting coming out of my mouth. I can't.
Before we move on, we can move on next to Dallas Phoenix, since we talked about it a little bit. What's your prediction on this series? How's it going to shake out?
Celtics or
Celtics Bucks?
I picked I'm doing a thing on when you run your pool bracket. I picked Bucks and six. So, ooh. You know, I picked Bucks and six.
Was that before Middleton?
This was before the playoffs started. So yeah, gotcha. We did it before the playoffs started.
Well, I'll allow you to adjust that because it's 2-2. I'm not even adjust that. Just like your read on this series based on how it's gone with Middleton out. You still going Bucks and six?
Yeah, I think, you know, Drew plays a little better. I don't know if Horford, I mean, he's done it for four games, so I can't say he'll come back down to earth, because these are great looks for an NBA caliber player. So I don't know, but I'm going to stick with Bucks at six. If it goes seven, I would lean Celtics, because I trust Giannis, but I don't trust anybody else on that team in a win or go home situation. It's weird because Drew Holiday is a vet, but you just never know when you're going to get one of those stinkers from him, man.
Yeah, and the way these refs are going at home, you got to go the whole home team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go Bucks. No, I'm going Celtics in seven. With Chris Middleton out, I think Boston is the better team. I think that Grant Williams has been a beast, by the way.
Amazing. That's the best I've seen Giannis defended this year, honestly. And Giannis is still getting his money, but that's the best I've seen Giannis defended this year.
And just a very smart player, man. And he was 1 of 5. He was off today. And minus 17. Wow, that's really interesting, which, you know, whatever, we'll take that with a grain of salt. But
hey, everybody's allowed to have bad playoff games. Everybody has them. Grant will he can have his first ever.
Yeah. Giannis, by the way, did score 34 points. However, he did it on, you know, 43.7% from the field. 14. He scored 32, 34 points on 32 shots. as a James Harden fan, I've heard that that's not good at all. So,
well, Harden would be 9 for 32. That was the thing. We just have 17 free throw attempts, so it's a little different.
That is correct. And he would not have 18 rebounds. And I said, as
he'd
a
have James 18 Harden assists, fan, though.
That's as a former James Harden fan, because that is no longer the case. So I'll go Celtics in 7. Look, I just think defensively, I love what they do with Tatum, with Brown, with Marcus Smart, with Grant Williams. Horford has been great as well. Horford's turning the clock back. I mean, it's been incredible to watch. But yeah, if Horford can keep doing that, do we know if they're going to get Robert Williams back?
Doesn't look good.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
Okay, well, that's tough. If they don't get Robert Williams back, I think it's definitely going 7. If they do, then they continue to be defensively versatile. And then off the bench, I like Derek White and what he's been able to do. I think that they need to play Daniel Tice less, and they did. But Milwaukee has the best player in the series, so anything can happen. That's where I'm going Celtics in 7, because anything can happen if you get to game 7. So we'll wrap that up there, and let's go to Dallas and Phoenix. Zach,
Celtics in 7, though. That's all I'm saying. That's all I need to say. Celtics in 7. Of course. Sorry.
So Suns-Mavs, Dak, what you got?
Suns-Mavs, it's mind-blowing that Dallas has gotten back in this thing to me, but that's...
Why is it mind-blowing?
I just don't value Dallas's talent, and Jalen Brunson hasn't been going bonkers this series. Like, if you would have told me the series is 2-2 going into Game 5, I would have said Jalen Brunson's continuing to play out of his mind, not Maxi Kleber and Dorian Finney-Smith, and who I've always appreciated those guys and understand they're good, but not these guys are. Whew, these guys are like $20 million players right now. I don't know if that can continue with Phoenix's coaching staff and the personnel that they have. I think they're going to slow them down. I'll be shocked if they don't. Devin Booker is going to be much better along with Chris Paul. I mean, Chris Paul, this is the worst 2-game stretch he's ever. I've seen. I'd have to go back and do the math on it, but this is awful on Chris Paul's.
It's his worst 2-game stretch. My thing for me is, which was frustrating watching, because I was rooting for the Pelicans around one. I think they could have won that series without Booker playing. I think they could have won.
That's Brandon Ingram propaganda.
Right. All I'm going to say is, like, the Dallas doesn't even have super athletic bigs.
Right.
The thing is, they're just taking away Chris Paul's mid-range. And like, just stepping up, just those 2 steps higher changed your entire defensive scheme. Just those 2 steps higher. And I'm watching, like, I'm so frustrated watching Jackson Hayes and Jonas Valanciunas just letting possibly the best mid-range point guard shooter ever just walk into a shot that is he can make in his sleep. And it's frustrating because, like, Maxi Kleber is not what you call a top-tier athlete. You know, Dwight Powell is somewhat athletic, but I'm like, dude, you can't. They're just taking those 2 steps higher, putting their hand up. It's making Chris Paul's life miserable the last 2 games. Those extra 2 steps higher. It's not letting them get a clean look at a mid-range jumper. And I think we talked earlier. I think maybe they got scared at the end of game 2, but Phoenix kind of adjusting their coverages to give Luka more attention, which I get, he's a great player, but just giving those guys, it's become a shooting gallery. Mm-hmm. You know, when you offer that much help, it's a shooting gallery. Guys are making, obviously not going to keep shooting at that rate, but they're NBA players who are getting open shots. They can hit at about 40-45% on all open looks. You know what I mean? And then it's a series. They got to make Luka, like Luka, you know, let him get that 40. But just to me, the 40 points and 8 assists is less damaging than the 25 and, 12 assists.
Absolutely.
Because other guys are getting the rhythm. They're into the game, and it's tougher.
100%. You got to stay at home. You got to stay home with shooters, man. I mean, it's that simple because, first of all, human nature is to get tired, right?
Yeah.
If Luka's going to win 4 games, putting up 40 and 15, you tip your cap.
You shake his hand.
you shake his hand and pat him on the butt and, go to the locker room. But you got to stay home, especially because if you don't, and then these guys start hitting threes, I think they hit 20 threes. If you don't, all of a sudden, you are scrambling on defense. And there's nothing that discombobulates a defense like when you are running out to a shooter and then he's pumping and closing and then someone else is stepping and now the ball handler is kicking it and then someone else is shifting and you're just like, you're chasing all over the place. But if you stay at home, it's predictable. You make them predictable. At some point, you might lose a couple games doing it, but at some point, Luke is going to get tired or he's going to get, he's going to look around, survey and say, I don't really like anything I'm seeing. Step back mid-range, right? And you can live with that. So that's what I would do. I would stay at home on the shooters. Don't let as Shaq and Barkley say, don't let the others get going.
Yeah.
And if Luka's going to beat you, man, he beats you. But it's less probable than it is likely. So
I want to make a note that this is one of the most biggest illusions that you can see from a statistical presence. If you're not watching each game in this series, you'll think Chris Paul probably played pretty damn good looking at his percentages right now. It's just a big farce. Like, the playoffs are one thing that efficiency is overrated, first of all, because either players are doing really good or they're just shooting duds, you know? And really, at the end of the day, and I can't say this enough, and I try to pound it home all the time with players, you really need to play good three or four games, good to great, 3 to 4 games to be a good series, to have a great series. Chris Paul had one great game, game one. Game two is just okay, and then he's throwing up two stinkers. But if you don't watch the games, you would look at his stats and say 16-6-6. He's shooting 60% and 50% from the field. He's had a bad series, man. He's had a bad series. So
no, well, you're right, but I think 16-6-6 for Chris Paul in a playoff series is not going to get it done. Yeah. So the percentages and the efficiency might be there, but 16-6 is not going to get it done unless Book and Ayton are going off, which brings me to another point that I think is very important. DeAndre Ayton, man, like you said, Dallas doesn't have bigs.
That was my next point. Good job. That was my next point. Yeah, that was my next point.
They have finesse bigs. They got finesse bigs, man. He's supposed to be a big man in there, like, especially, you know, and people, especially the NBA Twitter cheerleaders that, like, would never utter a bad word about a player in their life. They can't get around this, but it's like, yo, maybe that's why they didn't max him out.
So to that point, I'll say this. This is what I see from a tactical standpoint. They've become so just enthusiastic about hunting Luka, they're forgetting about the other matchups they have. That's what I see. That's why I say a little bit. I think Luka's, to his credit, has upped his effort and focus on defense just a hair, which is, like, really helped because it was really bad the first couple games. And kid finally had to call him out. Like, it was really bad. I think they're so focused on trying to hunt Luka, they're missing the forest for the trees. You know what I mean? Like, DeAndre Ayton has a mismatch that may not involve Luka, but it's a mismatch. You know, you got to feed him. He's got incredible touch around the basket and just 10 feet in. It's kind of amazing. He's got to be, like, for the play, he's got to be 80% from 10 feet in at least.
He does. And I say this all the time. Basketball is about getting easy buckets. And I think we've gotten to a point, and I think the Rockets might be, I think the Warriors started this and the Rockets, like, spammed it to a point where, you know, it just kind of went to a different level. Hunting mismatches on the perimeter is overrated. Like, yes, it's a big thing to do, but it takes a lot of energy. You have to exert a lot of energy getting that thing and just, like, you know, hunting somebody play after play after play. It might work if you're beating that man and then defenders are collapsing and you kick and the ball swings and you hit a three. But it's, in theory, to me, it's a lot easier to just dump it down to Ayton, punish them, make them double down Ayton, and then all of a sudden you kick it, kick out for a three, which is much easier than, like, getting the switch, wasting 12 seconds, driving, kick, you know what I mean? It's just, like, a much simpler, easier game. And then when you do that, you establish the post presence, you kick it back to the shooter, you repost to Ayton. Like,
you're going to get the analytics guys upset. You know, a post up, like, the least efficient basketball play.
I know. But this is the analytics guys upset. Throw that out the window. Hey, throw that out the window. Miami, best 3-point shooting team in the regular season. Can't buy a three. You know,
and I think to Aiden's max thing, they better do it, because I know Detroit has money to throw out and they need a center. Charlotte needs a center, like, more than anybody in the NBA right now. They'll have max money.
I hope they trade for Christian Wood. But look, here's the thing.
Just pawning
throw out that agenda. But here's the thing. Let's say they lose this series. I still think Phoenix will win, but let's say they lose. Are you maxing Ayton? Are you locking in this squad if you get bounced in the second round?
Now, they got it quietly. Honestly, I'm thinking, like, honestly.
Tell Chris Paul to retire.
I was just about to say that. I mean, that's the thing. Like, he's real cerebral, so he made it the season, but he's lost a lot. Like, he's very cerebral. He can pick his spots. He took advantage of a very inexperienced Pelicans team in the first round, which was great. But if you look over the course of the season, he's severely pick dependent now. He's not going to create an advantage off the bounce unless he's playing against a plotting big, which is an issue for a guy making 30 M's. I love.
Trust me, you don't know how many times I've heard, but Chris Paul couldn't beat Kevon Looney off the dribble.
Yeah, so. But I, you know, I, You know, I love Cameron Johnson. You know, I don't know. Like, they start with being really cheap. Some teams going to be very happy getting Cam Johnson and playing him much more minutes. You got to keep Aiden. Because at this point, you can't even sign a trade because, you know, of a hard cap situation on a signing trade. But, yeah, I think the answer is, I think, you know, Zach Noe was that hard conversation. He's like, Chris, do you really? I mean,
can you take that Tom Brady pay cut, Chris?
2% ownership stake, man.
Well, here's my theory. I have a theory that you don't max. I have a theory that you don't max a guy like a big. You don't max a big unless they are an Embiid, a Giannis, a Jokic.
I think Aiden has so much more to give, though. I think they just don't run through
the potential. The potential. I agree.
He does. But that's why I'm saying if it doesn't pan out, right? If it pans out, of course. But if it doesn't pan out, because that's when teams make these types of decisions, and like that's when it becomes a big question when you don't succeed, right? Especially if you don't get to the – if a team that went to the finals that wins 64 games in the regular season gets bounced in the second round, that's when it's like, well, is this really the path forward, right? Because if you have that much money tied up in a big, obviously you can't spend that money elsewhere. And I feel like you can get – not always, but mostly in this stage of the NBA, you can get like 65% of that production at, you know, like a tenth of the cost, right? Aiden, what? Yeah, I don't know what –
Yeah, so here's the thing. I don't even. This is where I'm at. They don't beat the Pelicans without Aiden, even what Chris Paul did. That's a play-in team. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's a play-in team. Like So I think they need him. And here's the thing: is with the NBA, Aiden's just he entering free agency at the right time. Right. There's a bunch of teams that need center. A bunch of teams that need centers and are willing.
But if they don't max him, he's gone. He's going to get a max.
That's what I'm saying. So it's a decision they have to make. And unfortunately, you know, Sarver's cheap. I heard there's a new ownership group trying to get, you know, into control of the team. But, you know, Sarver's being notoriously cheap. But I just think these last two playoff runs, you know, Aiden's big games. Phoenix turns into a juggernaut when he plays the right. Like you got, when he plays the right way, Phoenix becomes, you know, best team in the league.
Don't get it twisted. Because what I am saying, I'm not saying Aiden's not that guy.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Because what I am saying is they should play through Aiden because I think he has a physical advantage.
Yeah, I agree.
If they don't, to me, it begs the question, like, why not? Now, to that point, when the Mavericks hired Jason Kidd, a lot of people gave them shit for it. I think I did. I think both of me and Zach did.
Mainly on that they could do better and his past reputation.
Right.
I think he's a better coach than people give him credit for.
Yeah.
We'd have to dig that conversation up. I think we also shat on his head coaching, but he's doing a hell of a job, and I think he deserves some credit.
So my thing about Jason Kidd was, like, you know, I raised eyebrows. I wasn't all out. Oh, why would you hire this guy? My thing is, no matter, even through how terrible you may have thought he was and all, you know, his few stints before, everywhere he's been, head coach or assistant, the star player, absolutely loved playing for him.
But he wasn't bad in Milwaukee. The team kept getting better.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know,
he got cut out right before Giannis became a superstar.
Those old guys in Brooklyn, when they were old, Aaron Brook Lopez, loved Jason Kidd. Giannis Antetokounmpo, absolutely pissed when he got fired. LeBron James, absolutely. Jason Kidd was his favorite coach on the staff.
And they fell off a cliff.
I'll say this. You can say all that about the X's and O's and culture and all that. Biggest part of NBA coaching, getting your star to like that.
That is the culture, man.
Getting your star to buy. Like that stuff, that All Lives Matter offense, the Warriors run with the 17 screens and back put, it works because 30 wants to do it.
Yes.
He gives any pushback at all, the offense is done. So I think you get a star player to buy into what you want, and Jason Kidd obviously has. If he's comfortable enough to criticize Luka, who has not signed a Supermax yet, has he?
Not yet.
Luka signed a
Supermax? No, he did. I think he did. That was a quick reflex.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. If he's able to get criticized Luka like that in the press, that says a lot. He's like, you know, he's in the press saying Luka has to participate on defense.
Yeah, and I agree with you, man. I mean, look, the biggest thing about the NBA, and this is, as a Rockets fan, this is one of my biggest question marks about Stephen Silas.
Yeah.
Do you command respect, you know?
Yeah.
Players like Stephen Silas, for example, but does he command respect? I feel like Jason Kidd, when he steps in that locker room, He commands respect. He's been there. He's done that. He's played with some of the best of the best. He's led teams to the finals that shouldn't have been there. He's won a championship. Like, he's done it. So
everything you just said reminded me of Ryan Saunders. That's who Steven Silas is. Ryan Saunders. He's just a nice little cute, likable guy.
Right. Yeah. And like, to me, like, that means nothing. I don't care if you're likable. Like, at the end of the day, when you say something, do they listen and buy in, or are they just kind of looking at you like, yeah, you know, cool. So I think that, man, and Jason,
you're that was the thing. That's what I said. And I think Kidd may have been that guy for the Lakers bench.
Right.
Because they did, you know, even though he wasn't the head coach, like, I'm sure, you know, he had some weight with, you know, whatever Vogel was saying. And the same thing, like, the other team I enjoy watching, the Pelicans. Like, the main difference between, you know, Stan and Willie Green is, like, they respect Willie Green.
Like, you know, Willie Green,
man. And I tell you, like, this is the wild story. You know, Stan's coming in, you know, Brandon Ingram shooting around. Stan's telling him to turn the music down. And Brandon's basically telling Stan to shut the fuck up. Like, that happened last year. Wow. That happened last year in New Orleans. Like, I don't think that happens with Will. If you see how he talks about Willie Green, I don't think that happened. So the respect factor is definitely an issue.
Yeah, we get into X's and O's and, you know, all this, but, like, none of that matters if they're not tuned in to you. So with that said, Mavs Suns, I have it going 6. I think the Suns win in Phoenix. I think they come back to Dallas. It's a close game, and they pull it off. But I could also see it going 7. Zach, what about you?
Yes. Suns and 7.
Okay. I got 6. Mate, I'm next to
Suns and 6.
Before the series, I had Suns and 6, but just the way things are going, it's Suns and 7.
I'll be very interested to see if and how Monty Williams adjusts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, so I just want to let you guys know I am watching this at El Mute on YouTube TV on my phone as we're doing this. Just a hell of a defensive half from Memphis. That was
41-38.
Freaking incredible the way they're defending.
And people forget, like, they're used to playing without Ja.
20-2 without Ja this year.
Yeah.
And look, Steven Adams gets plugged right back in. This is why I hate that, oh, he's unplayable, or, oh, in this matchup, so-and-so's unplayable. Not necessarily. Basketball's a funny game like that. Like, if you can impose your will on a game and dictate the pace, you can pick and choose who is playable. And Steven Adams right now is plus 5 with 6 points and 10 boards.
Clay, 3 for 12, 0 for 6 from 3. Steph, 5 of 11, 1 for 6 from 3.
And Steph only played 16 minutes, and Jordan Poole only played 14 minutes. Clay played 21. That's weird to me.
Yeah, I'm not seeing there's no. I gotta say, I don't remember seeing anybody get tripped up or any fouls, or getting hurt or anything. So that's definitely weird. There's no foul trouble either.
Huh. No, only the Warriors have only been called for 5 fouls in 2 quarters.
Huh.
Same with Memphis. Interesting. So we got 2 more series, and let's get to those, and we can wrap this up. So we are Zach. You want to go Eastern Conference or West? Let's go. We went East, West. Let's go back to the East.
Back to the East. Okay, so that would be
Miami.
Miami and Philly. And so, speaking of somebody that needs to be dusted off, I truly think Dustin. Duncan. He's dusty, man. He's dusty today. We need to dust off Dustin Robinson. And he hasn't even been playing that bad before he got benched. They just...
I just think when you're staple, and you can say what you want about their staple, is three-point shooting. They led the NBA in three-point shooting.
Still shooting.
You got to let your best shooter play. I know, but my thing is that they've gone from the best three-point shooting team in the NBA, which is the key stat to why they got the number one seed. They literally shot you out the gym to go from that to one of the worst 3-point shooting teams in the playoffs. Even against Atlanta, it was sub 30% for the series against Atlanta. It's just Atlanta was such a bad defensive team, it didn't matter. There's a layup drill whenever they wanted. But to beat Philly, they are going to have to need to make some three. Embiid is back. He's going to control the interior. They're going to lose paint points every game. They're going to lose the inside battle every game. They need to make threes. And I think they need to play Duncan Robinson, the Kyle Lowry signing for all those teams that were fighting to sign him in the offseason. They look like to avoid something. That guy looks cooked, and he's got two more years on his deal.
Well, he's hurt, to be fair.
He didn't have a great year when he was healthy, in my opinion. But, that's definitely – but the thing is, you can say that, Roosh. Once you hit 35 as an NBA player, how many of those guys stay healthy?
Well, and when you play as a game, Lowry played a physical game, man. He was a bruiser.
Hey, man, I turned 33 in like 3 weeks, and I'm breaking down literally every day. I believe it. But I'll say this, and I agree with you. So Duncan Robinson played 26 minutes per game. He played 79 games out of 82. 26 minutes per game. Oh, am I lagging?
No, you're good.
Okay, 26 minutes per game, 79 games. And to just all of a sudden ditch that, he played 13 minutes per game in the first series. He's played 55 seconds total.
Again. He shot 53% from three in that series. He went 8-for-9 in that game. Like, Max Strus, you just believe in his defense a little more? Like, Duncan's not a bad defender.
I mean, let him guard Danny Green.
Right? Like, and that's the thing. People are like, oh, he's so bad at defense. Yeah, well, yeah, he is. But what does that matter if you're going 5 of 30 or whatever they did from three? He scored 27 points in game one against Atlanta, 8 of 9 from three. Atlanta's a bad defensive team, like we said. But again, like I just said, talking about Steven Adams, if you dictate the pace and you impose your style of play, all of a sudden, like the NBA is it's a chess game. Basketball is a chess game in motion, right? If you are on the attack and if you are dictating the pace, it doesn't matter what the counters, it doesn't matter what the other team's identity is, because now they're countering you and they're out of their like rhythm, right? For all my chess players who may or may not be listening, like you can have a game plan going into a chess game and all of a sudden someone makes a move and now you're backpedaling. And so that's
what we got to play. We got to play.
I would love to play. I would love to mop the floor with you in chess. But that's what I'm saying. They got to play him. I mean, they resorted to playing Gabe Vincent. You know, is like, I don't think Gabe Vincent's great defensively, and his 3-point shot wasn't falling. So what do you do then, you know?
So. I think that'd be a judgment. Spo is known as an adjuster. So yes. I definitely think, you know, Robinson's going to play more. Like, it's like the first adjustment, right? We can't make a three. Let's play our best 3-point shooter.
It's so easy, right? Like,
what are we doing? You go from scheming James Harden, though, for the first couple of games, and then you got Joel Embiid just inserted in here. It's going to take a little bit.
Yeah, he's killing Bam. I think Bam is a great defender, but that's just where Embiid is as a player now. Offensively, he's just a lot to deal with. Then you get to a point where you're so scared to foul him, you don't defend him hard, and it just makes the game that much easier for him. Like, it's just he's a beast to deal with. And I picked Miami in six, so I'm nervous.
I honestly think Philly's going to win this unless Embiid gets hurt again. I love seeing Bam brought back to earth. Not because I dislike Bam, but I feel like he's one of those guys that NBA Twitter just loves.
Yep.
And when you see him put up against a real juggernaut,
yep,
you see him get reduced to, you know, there are levels to this. When we're talking big men, there are levels. There always have been levels. Bam's not that guy. He's a good player, but he's not that.
Yeah, I was arguing because I was arguing. So you guys know Nekias Duncan?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so Nekias is my guy. He's a big Heat fan, and I did my top 10 list of top players under 25, whatever, and he got back because Bam wasn't on there. We've been going back and forth since then. I was like, dude, there's just no way I can put Bam on there. I'm like, you're not a shot creation guy. You're not going on my top 10.
I thought he was going to develop that this year, man. I was wrong. Like, he still has plenty of time. He still can get there, but he didn't take any leaps this year. He went backwards, if anything, as a playmaker.
Here's the thing. He's 6'9", right? Yeah. Again, like, there's levels to it, man. Like, you can be a very solid player, but if you're 6'9", going against an Embiid, we'll see if they go against a Giannis in the next round. Who knows? Going against whoever it is, right? Like, when you have to be able to bring it, weight matters. Against a guy like Embiid, sheer size and weight simply matters. And if you can't make up for that with, like, wingspan, and if you can't make up for that on offense by knocking down shots, both of which, you know, Bam is unable to do against Embiid, then this is what happens, you know? So
100% agree.
Guys that were guarded by Embiid went 4-for-17.
Yeah, see, I think Embiid catches a bad rap defensively too. He's really good there when he was
tremendous.
So
he's just so big. He covers so much ground. It's ridiculous. Yeah. I'm actually going to take this time also to last night my timeline. I don't know what y'all's timeline looked like, but my timeline was losing its mind for James Harden.
And
the performance I
had to give him credit. Vintage game. I have nothing to take away from that game. Vintage game.
But he's one of the prime examples of who I talk to when efficiency doesn't matter in the playoffs, because I think he brings so much more to the table, and that's just not who he's wanting to be or trying to be. He wants to be Chris Paul, and he's done it greatly. I mean, that pick and roll with him is.
Here's my thing with Harden. I agree. Like that my thing with Harden, even back to Rockets, OKC days, it's about moments with him. There's a lot of moments.
Moments, man. His moments come in game three or five.
It matters.
We're not going to go down there.
In any game, the moments matter, especially late. Like, you know, and it's like, what's your James Harden moment? Like, I know, like, other greats, like, I got 100 Jordan moments, 100 Kobe moments, bunch of Iverson moments, you know, a book of LeBron moments. What's James Harden playoff moment to you?
I think he has a ton of them, but like...
A ton?
So
a ton.
Here's the thing. He's had more...
He doesn't.
I personally think he's as good, if not a better... playoff performer than just about anybody not named LeBron, Kevin Durant, and maybe Anthony Davis. Luca's getting into there, but Luca needs a little more sample.
That's incorrect.
He has way more 30-point games than Steph Curry. He has more 40-point games. He does so much more on the court than Steph Curry does.
No. Let me just tell you, man. No one knows.
I'm not saying it's a for sure thing. There's an argument to be made.
Okay.
Why?
So I'll say this. These are my.
He has more than Larry Bird, Jason.
I understand. So would you? You taking Larry Bird and try prime James Harden?
Bro. No, I'm not. I'm just saying.
Why would you?
I'm just dropping a number.
I got you. My thing is like, so these are like the James Harden moments. You know what I'm saying? So like, dude, Kawhi's out. Get blown off the floor. Don't take a shot in the first quarter of like that. NBA record for turnovers in a closeout game. That. The NBA Finals, where he's sixth man of the year. He literally won the Spurs series for him. He gets to the finals, gets pushed around a little bit in game one by Miami, disappears the whole series. You understand what I'm saying? The 27 missed threes. I don't take the onus and think, hey, maybe I need to go to the bucket or take a mid-range or get a layup. We're going to miss 27 straight threes. Like, it's too much of that stuff. He has so much red in his playoff ledger. It's more so than a normal superstar. He is a superstar. He has a lot more red in his ledger than normal superstars do. It's my issue with Harden.
That's fair. But the problem is with Harden, he gets compared to top five and better players all the time. He needs to be compared to top 20 and less, because he's top 25. That's the biggest issue. Like,
okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Standards. It's all about expectations and standards. Your standards for Harden are way too high. Steph Curry's not meeting him or exceeding him either. And I have him 12th all time. I have Steph Curry 12th all time. I have James Harden 20-25 range. But what about in 2019 when they were down 0-2 to the Warriors? James Harden dropped 79 points in games 3 and 4.
Okay.
There's plenty. I mean, but like, I don't think he's ever really had the team. I think he has the team this year. If Embiid's good enough. If Embiid's good enough, there's not any excuses as long as Embiid stays healthy to not, unless he runs into the Bucks with Middleton, that's it. Then that's a team you can lose to. That's my expectations for Philly. I hold him in that higher regards if Embiid's better than what he's been.
Okay.
And I think he's getting better.
So as the resident Harden expert, let me tell you. Both of you are right to an extent. Here's the thing. His moments, these are his top moments, right? That, like, off the top as a fan that I remember without like looking at the numbers and like, recalling he had those numbers. The shot over the Spurs as a member of the Thunder when he sealed the deal, I think it was game 5 or 6 in that conference finals when it was KD, Russ. Mm-hmm. He had a game winner against the Warriors in round one. No, it was not. It was a mid-range shot.
He had another one on the. He had another one on the wing, though.
That was the regular season.
Promise you, it was in the playoffs.
You gonna talk?
Come on, dog.
It was a double. You talking about the one where he nailed it with Draymond and Clay in his face?
Yeah,
That was regular season.
It was a double OT. It was a double over. You want to put money on it right now?
I do.
I'll put $5,000.
No money. But just keep going. Keep going. Keep going.
It was a double OT regular season game. I think it ended 135-132. I trust me for a minute. So, game winner against the Warriors in round one of, I think, the 2016 playoffs as an 8 seed that they got bounced in 5 in. So it's like, okay, his best moment of the playoffs, I think personally, is game, I want to say 4. It was either game 4 or 5 against the Warriors in the 2018 series where he mashed on Draymond and he got the and one. And it was like,
that was that Oracle, right?
Second quarter.
He was really good that game. I remember. Yeah.
So, but here's the thing. All of his moments come with like that, the end of the conclusion was shitty, right? Like, so they're all just kind of like hampered. Now, did he have other moments? Yeah. Like Zach said, against the Warriors, in 2019, the series they lost, he went crazy. 35 in the first game, 41 in game 3, 38 and 10 in game 4, 31 in game 5, 35 in game 6. But they lost those games. And most of those games, you know, he shot, 47, 44, 40, you know, it was like 14 of 32, 13 of 29, 11 of 25. So it's like, you know.
I don't mind that because he didn't disappear. Like I said, efficiency in the playoffs is overrated to me. Me and Zach are on the same page there.
Another one of his moments is closing game 7 against the Clippers when they made the comeback, right? So to Jason's point, one of the moments on the negative side is the Rockets making the game 6 comeback with Harden on the bench, which to this day, I'm totally okay with. Like,
they would have done it with or without him, but that's fine.
No, man, when I was watching the game, I remember I was like, don't put him in. Like, I was like, whatever they've got going on, I don't know what
got in. He wouldn't have been in that position without Harden, though.
I don't know what soul, ghost, or whatever got into Brewer and Josh Smith that night, but it was like, bottle this up, ride with it. And I wish more coaches would do that in those moments because, like, sometimes momentum matters. And like we were talking about, like, a defense is so discombobulated, and the Clippers were. But in Game 7, he came out and closed him out. I think he had, like, 30 and 5 and something like that. He also, in 2015, when the Rockets went to the Western Conference Finals, in Games 1 and 2, he went crazy. And the Rockets almost beat the Warriors in both of those games. They ended up losing the series 4-1. So people, like, when they look at it in retrospect, they clown it and write it off. Like, they only remember the turnover game that Jason mentioned. But game one, let me see this. Game one, he had 28, 11, and 9. Game two, he had 38, 10, and 9. And they lost game one by 4 and game two by 1. So, like, he went crazy. And then in the one game they did win, he dropped 45. 9 boards, 5 dimes on 13 to 22, 7. So he's like, he's had those moments. He also had a triple double against Utah in the first round in 2019, killed Utah. So he's had those moments. However, the biggest criticism I've had of him, this is what you see in those games where it's like the closeout game against San Antonio where they just get blown off the floor without Kawhi and Tony Parker. He has this T-Mac quality to him where T-Mac was always like nonchalant. Like he never wanted to. He wanted to let the game come to him. He always just tried to
grab the ball. Yeah.
Yeah. He tried to play in his, let the game come to him, play in his rhythm and like, just not overdo it. And the playoffs are the type of game where you have to like killer instinct, like, yo, get out of my way. I'm making this happen because I'm good enough to make this happen. And he never did that. So he'd always just kind of like dribble, take the step back. And it's like, yo, we're down 10 in game 7 or game 6. We're about to lose. Dribble, step back. It's like, dog, please.
LeBron, Jordan, other stars have passed up the game-winning shot too. I mean, let's be honest.
Game 7, when they go 0-27, it's like there are many other factors, mainly the referees and also Mike D'Antoni. I don't even want to get into that, but it's like, bro, you're a hooper. Again, if anyone who hoops, you know, like if you are off, if you are 0-27, force the issue. Go to the basket. You used to be a mid-range killer. Go back to it.
The mid-range is what really pissed me off. He refused to...
In the games in 2015, in the conference finals where I was talking about, he had those awesome games against the Warriors, but they lost in 5. He go back and go to YouTube and go watch like the condensed game highlights just to keep it easy. He was cooking from mid range. I mean, unstoppable from mid range. And all of a sudden he just went away from it. Now, with all that said, last night was a vintage Harden performance, but it's funny because like it was vintage and it still wasn't that crazy. He had 31 points on 8 of 18.
It was a low-scoring game. He had 16 points in the fourth.
Yeah, like the fourth quarter, he closed. That was the thing.
He closed.
Right.
He closed. That was the big thing.
But the crazy thing is he's been fabulous in the first quarter and the first half for like 12 games straight. He just – what people aren't talking about enough, and I think it's more due to the fact, like, sure, it could be a little bit of the hamstring, hasn't had time to recover there. Could be his body. But, like, I think historical usage – that very few people have ever reached the usage levels that Harden has had, the loads that he's taken on, but the dude had a stretch where he did more than just about anybody in this game's ever done, like physically on the basketball court.
And he had great players telling him, you are not going to win that
correct.
Way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look,
but he didn't have the talent to.
He wanted to play. You can say he wanted to play that way. Whatever.
Yes, he was enabled. He wanted to play that way.
Because I'll tell you this. Yes. Chris Paul. I'm not a Chris Paul fan, but the minute Chris Paul raised questions about the offense, he was gone for Westbrook.
And I can confirm for you. I can confirm for you. I mean, with information that like it was that it was hard.
I could have bet before this show that we were going to go down this hole.
Yeah, I know.
Fucking hammered the
that's,
over.
That's like the negative of me. You gotta keep me away from that topic because it like burns me to my soul.
I'm just saying he wanted to play that way. That was the thing for me. You can say that, but he knowing that that was not going to be super successful at the end, he wanted to play that way.
I also think they just got too ingrained in Mike D'Antoni's system, and
that's well, they did. He loved D'Antoni. D'Antoni enabled him.
It was just.
But let's. We'll stick to playoffs. So look, I'll say this.
Dude, let's stick to playoffs.
How about Tyrese Maxey? Holy shit, that kid.
Love him. They look like geniuses for insisting to keep him out of the deal.
Yes. And that was for the record.
They would have put him in that deal? The dude's almost better than Kyrie.
For anyone who got this twisted, when the Harden to the Nets trade happened from Houston to Brooklyn, Philly wouldn't include Maxey in that deal either. So the Rockets were like, yo, Philly's only giving us, I think it was two picks with protection on them, and the Nets gave them unprotected picks, and they're not getting Maxey, right? So, like, that's why they said, no thanks, Ben Simmons, Philly. We'll take the you know, all the picks, and we'll flip Oladipo and do all the stuff they did. So the big thing, though, with Harden is he's a scorer, man. He's been known for scoring the basketball, and now he's playing like point guard. But they need him to score because Tyrese Maxey's been great, but no one can score like Harden and Embiid when they're at their primes, right, when they're at their peaks. So without him being like that dominant scorer.
Only if Embiid's down. I don't think they need Harden to do that.
Yeah, but he went down for two games, and what did he do?
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. I think that's to Zach's point, though. If Embiid's right, I think Harden's very comfortable playing how he is and picking his spots and facilitating. Even if Maxey's going to steal a little bit of thunder and have a couple big games, I think Harden would embrace that at this point in his career.
Harden's shooting so much better when Embiid's on the court. Like,
yeah. It's the attention.
Right. He averaged 18 a game with Embiid out, though. He averaged 14 shots per game. 14?
Well, he can't create.
Dude, that wall was fucking huge. Well, dude, that's what wall was bigger than Trump's, man.
It goes back to the forcing the issue comment, right? He needed to force the issue in those scenarios, and he didn't. And they got their asses beat, you know? So with Embiid back, I think honestly, I think Embiid being healthy, I think Philly wins in 6 or 7, personally. So what about you?
I said Miami is 6. I'm gonna ride my original pick.
Okay.
My thing with that is Miami's shot quality is good. They're just throwing up a bunch of bricks. The shot quality is still great. So that's my thing. If they just like normalize a little bit, series changes. But if the way Embiid's playing, I'm not mad at anybody who's picking Philly at this point.
Zach?
Yeah, I got Philly in 7, and I hate keep saying 7. That's like the third series I've said 7 now. But
well, they're all 2-2.
They are, and I just think that the way things are looking, I want to see a historical 3-game 7 going forward here. Jimmy Butler, man, I think he's going to keep trying to do what he's doing, and he's not getting the others involved like he needs to. I think they've gone away from team ball, and it's more so Jimmy ball now. I can't believe in it that much. So from the beginning I had Philly in 6. I mean, Embiid's unreal, and just what he's doing on defense.
Yeah, Jimmy's weird. I think he's the best tier two star in the NBA. And I think that's the tough part about him. He's not quite a tier one guy.
You mean it's not Bam?
He's the best. I think Jimmy's the best tier two guy in the league.
Thing about Miami is they have a really good team across the board, but it's tier two. Their best players are tier two guys, right? Yeah. They don't have like that. And the NBA is driven.
Star driven, yeah. Yeah.
Are they deep, bro? They're playing eight guys.
They
gotta play Duncan, man. They gotta play Duncan.
Markieff is healing too, so beware.
Yeah, okay.
Did not look good.
I'm a Morris stan, so
they're eight deep, and they're really only seven deep because the eighth man last night was Gabe Vincent, who played 10 minutes a game.
I do gotta ask you, Jason, Tyrese Maxey or Jordan Poole going forward?
That is tough. I think two similar guys. I'm gonna go with Poole.
I'm on the other side, so it'll be fun.
I think it's gonna be close though. But I love Poole. I just think I think this might be overdoing it because I saw on the Simmons and whatever Ryan Russo, whatever the host name is, they're top guards, and they had Maxey and Poole over LaMelo. I was like, this is ridiculous.
That was wild,
This is ridiculous. When I saw, I was like, you gotta understand this, it's a lot more on certain guys' plates than. Which is why I think it would have been absolutely petrifying for the league if the Warriors had drafted LaMelo.
Oh, man.
Because they would have Poole, too.
The Rockets fan in me is really happy they didn't. The basketball fan in me is.
Yeah, it's like, dude, you could put a passer of that caliber with
that ball.
It gives me chills, man.
I'm like, you got to understand, like, if you do a deep dive into LaMelo's playmaking numbers, like, it's literally absurd. He's like cream of the crop. He's just like, he has a center who can't roll, can't catch. So,
and he's still a kid.
Yeah. And they just,
I'm going to go Maxey because I think Maxey's like, I think Poole's a more electric scorer, but I think Maxey is a good enough scorer and can still do more on the ball creating. So
yeah, that's
I'll fair. Go Maxey. Also, shout out to an unsung hero, Tobias Harris.
Playing Tobias way better. But it's weird. He's always played better under Doc.
Under what?
Under Doc Rivers, he's been very like, when he's
that's a good point.
He was in with the Clippers. I forgot about that.
I mean, him and Danilo Gallinari were the best players on a.
He's putting up 17.7 a game, 8 boards, and 3.4 dimes with a steal, and just under 1 block per game on 52% from the field and 37.5% from 3.
See, that's 20. That's almost earned his contract.
Right in the
Ooh, easy there.
I know.
The most overpaid guy in the league.
Those are averages of 10 games in the playoffs. Here's the funny thing, though. Back to the thing about like. Harden not stepping it up with Embiid out. In those two games with Embiid out, Tobias Harris had 27 and 21 points.
Oh.
Like, outscored Harden in both games, right? Like, that's...
Harden was the point guard. He's playing the point guard role.
Getting paid 40-something million. So, I would say, yeah, Philly in 6 or 7. It's hard to predict if it's going to be 6 or 7. Oh, yeah, but this is my last comment. Miami is one of those teams that's good across the board. But their best players are tier two stars, right? So when you're in a playoff series where talent reigns supreme, those types of teams, even though they're better, they're like a souped up version of those types of teams always flame out. Like the 2015 Hawks, the DeMar DeRozan Raptors that one year where I think they were like the one or the two seed. It just doesn't, for whatever reason, it's like some of the parts don't add up to being more than.
Yeah, just, you know, playoff games become rock fights. You know, yeah. By the fifth or sixth game, they know all your sets, all your calls, and often it boils down to who has a guy that can make plays.
Yep. You know, we had a coach David Thorpe on this show like a year, year and a half ago, and he said something that really stuck with me. You can do all the numbers, you can do all the advanced stats, whatever you want. At the end of the day, what separates a lot of teams is guys that can make tough shots that are not their desired go-to shots. With the shot clock winding down, because oftentimes that creates the separation in a series, right? Like in a game 5, a game 6. So, and Miami doesn't have, they got Jimmy Butler, and that's it. Whereas,
don't underscore Tyler Hero. Come on now.
Is Tyler Hero proven that guy? He can, but he's like, if you're
picking. Bubble Tyler Hero has proven.
If you're picking a list of players to be like your go to tough shot maker, how high on that list is Tyler Hero?
57.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm taking a little higher than 57, but it's close.
Can he do it? Yes. Is he elite at it?
He's 57th. 57. That's like two or three guys per team. He's 57. That's
there you go. So, all right, last series, which is going on as we record this. So by the
time I'm watching, man. Grizzlies are, man, the Warriors tied it up, but the Grizzlies got back up ahead by six.
You want to talk about butt stains? This would be a butt stain. What, lose to these guys without Ja Morant?
Well, I'll say this. The big thing about the Grizzlies, without Ja, you can't. I love Ja, but the advanced, the eye test numbers don't lie. They are a tremendously better, much better defensive team with what he doesn't play. And that's just, you know, you can't lie to yourself.
Oh, the Wolves attacked him. They went at him nonstop.
Even as a fan, you can't deny. They're when he doesn't play, they're a top three defensive team. That's how drastic it is. And, you know, Warriors got 60 points to three quarters. Like, you know, and I think Ja is not going to be chasing Steph and Klay through 100 screen. Like, that's, you know, those other guys will, though, and you can see it. Steph 6 for 18, Klay 5 for 17, Poole 3 of 9. It's like they're not going to score as much. And Taylor Jenkins is right. I'm going to play my better defenders, and we're going to make it a rock fight and see what happens. And, you know, I am on the Steven Adams is unplayable in the playoff series train. But, you know, he shut me up today.
He's leading plus 12 right now.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, my thing with the Warriors is you take Draymond's playmaking away, they become mortal. And I think he's at three assists now. You make him because that makes him a zero on offense. Because if he's not playing, he's not going to score anyway, right? You take away his playmaking, he's a zero on offense.
Right.
And I think that levels the playing field a bit.
I think when that happens, I think they're putting the ball in Jordan Poole's hands too much, and the others are getting frustrated because he's not the playmaker that the others are. And I don't know. What do you think about that? I think
they need that. They need it. The Warriors need another on-ball creator besides Steph, especially on nights like this where Steph isn't going. Like, they need Poole to do what he does. So, like, I think what you're talking about more so is more so about balance. You know, finding the, I think last game was a healthy balance of letting guys get their game off and running the all lives matter offense. You know what I mean? I think they found the balance last game. But like I love Ja Morant. He's in my top five favorite players in the NBA. But it's just the facts. The Grizzlies are a much better defensive team when he doesn't play.
So I would like to, before I expand on what you guys just talked about, I would like to take this time to respectfully shit on Andrew Wiggins being an all-star this year.
His defense he beat my guy out. He beat my guy out. I'm here for this. He beat my guy out.
Ingram?
Yeah.
Bro, the fact that he was a starter is just unreal. Well,
it was either going to be Ingram or Edwards, in my opinion. It's going to be Ingram or Edwards, in my opinion.
Agreed. So 15-7. He's averaging 15-7 in the playoffs on really good percentages. Over 50% from the field, almost 41% from three. You know, but man, this guy was an all-star, and like
that's what happens when you got like 20,000 countries pulling for you.
K-pop, what's the K-pop stands got a hold of that tweet, man? It was a wrap. I'm with you on the Wiggins thing. What I will say is, before the Grizzlies started playing Adams, I thought Wiggins was making the small ball go. He was rebounding out of his mind the first three games of this series.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not. This is not Andrew Wiggins like slandered generally.
He's not all star. He's not all star starter though.
Exactly.
It's not my problem anymore. So slander.
The best version of him is what he's given the Warriors. It's like an elevated role player that can occasionally pop off, right? But all star starter, like you're seeing in a series right now, in a game like this where they could really use him stepping up. Like he's having a good game, but it's just like 14-6. You know, not an all star. So, but look. NBA Twitter would probably flame me for this, but these are my favorite types of games. Low scoring, defense, shots aren't coming easy.
I think about, you know, people are upset. The highest rated games are late, like the mid to late 90s. If you look at it, like the Michael Jordan, like those are still the highest rated games. And people don't want to see like no defense and offense. They want to see stars go through things. They want to see them go through, you know, turmoil and adversity. And like those are the best stories. You know what I mean? So making it so, you know, 130 point games are the norm and guys are shooting free throws, it's not as exciting.
It cheapens it. When you cheapen the production of points, like I can watch someone go off for 40.
Yeah. They want to see, you know,
a battle. Yeah. Like when someone's going off for 40 and it's just like ticky-tack free throw, ticky-tack being
right. One. Exactly.
You're just like, all right, whatever. But when they're battling, like these are the games you remember. And to the antithesis of what we talked about earlier, Grizzlies have shot 7 free throws. Warriors have shot 5 free throws, and this is the fourth quarter. The third quarter just ended. They've shot 12 combined free throws, and like,
yeah, I'm enthralled. Like I got the screen, like my screen right here. I'm not.
So what you're saying is you just like a brick fest?
No, I like good defense, yeah, because that's smart basketball. When you can make the right best of the best struggle, that's, I mean, you're doing something right. Smart basketball. Also,
It's a balance, Zach. It's a balance, Zach.
Yeah. This just isn't a balance. I mean, 529 from 3.
No, they'll probably end up like, you know, somewhere like under 100 to like low 90s, you know, like that's a solid basketball game, like a 103-94 slugfest. Like, I'm cool with that. But
process, baby, you're too focused on the end result.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. Like, because this is when you see what teams are made of. And now when one of these teams breaks through in the fourth quarter and like goes on that run, it means a lot. Because it used to be when that happened, you're like, oh man, game's over. Like, that was it, right? And now they come back so fast, and it's such a like seesaw and fouls. And, you know, it's like, I just like when it's a slugfest and then someone breaks through, and it's like a boxing match, right? Like they're going at it, and then someone gets rattled with that, like, you know, right hook. And you're like, yo, he's on his heels right now. If he, you know, if he doesn't regroup and get out of this, then he's done.
Then Tony Ferguson gets kicked in the chin, and oh, that was amazing. This past week. Look up that.
Got his face just rocked. But yeah, so we'll see what happens. So it's 2-1 right now. I guess let's talk about this game. I mean, 69-62. How do you think it's going to end? You think Memphis closes this out?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, Warriors definitely have the stars. It's a matter of they got to get some timely shot making from somebody. You know, Bane has been okay, it looks like. Tyus Jones is like, he's been the best shot creating guy, as far as, you know, got 12-4. They got to get some just timely shooting. They're up 9 now. They just scored again. They're up 9 with 11 minutes left. It's just, can you withstand a Curry flurry? You know, if he gets hot, you know, Clay's always good to go 5-for-18, then make, you know, he'll make his last 4 all of a sudden, you know, to salvage the game. But we'll see. I think, like I said, the best thing is, I said before the series, the Grizzlies do a better job as any team in recent memory of taking Draymond's playmaking away and making him a net zero on offense. I think when you make Draymond a plus on offense, the Warriors are pretty much unbeatable, which means he's passing and, you know, and setting guys up for open looks. But if you can take his playmaking away, he's just not much on offense at this point in his career. I remember, it's weird because he averaged a couple years, he averaged like 14 and 12 and 11 points a game. He had to be respected, but now
you can gum up their All Lives Matter offense when you stop them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
exactly.
He's the central cog that, yeah, like keeps it all like moving, because he's so goddamn smart. He knows where the ball's, yeah, supposed to go. So I had this theory. I was arguing with somebody over the weekend that Dylan Brooks being out made Memphis better. And maybe I'm wrong about that. But my whole thing was, look, he's so erratic and he takes shots away from the guys who should actually be taking the shots, that he can very quickly shoot you, yeah, out of a basketball game.
From a shot perspective, yeah, but his energy and defense, yeah, yeah, is super underrated.
Let me finish real quick.
Go ahead.
So they got blown out in the game that he sat. They also won, the Grizzlies won the game that he got ejected from. But right now, they're up 10, and he's 2 of 13. So it's almost like
that's both
things are right. You know? So
I think Grizzlies fan, a guy who covers the Grizzlies, shout out my boy Saint Asylum on Twitter. One of my dopest follows, Grizzlies fan. He was like, the Grizzlies will go to another level when he realizes he's Bruce Bowen and not Manu Ginobili.
Yeah.
Yeah. He thinks they'll ascend to another level once he gets that through his head. Like, maybe I don't need to be taking 15 shots a game, maybe it's 6 or 7, but I'll still be that lockdown defender. And I think that, you know, I kind of agree with that. He's just way too, like, this series, man, 3-for-13. 0-for-3, and then this one he's 2-for-13. Like that is some putrid offensive production. But his defense is amazing. So,
well, it's addition by subtraction with respect to like shooting.
Yeah,
like he helps his team by not shooting, and then he just, like, so much of basketball is understanding your role. You know, like, so many guys, like, I was playing today, and it was just 5 dudes trying to like play 5 out, and I was the only one like cutting baseline, setting the pick, like, saying like, yo, go here, getting the ball in the middle and like waving somebody like, yo, cut middle. And guys are just so used to standing. Like, we've gotten into this era of like, yo, you know, tween, hezzy, step back. But sometimes you just got to play your role, you know? And if Dylan Brooks would play that role and be like the ball mover.
He never will. That's not him.
Instead of like the on ball, you know, everyone's obsessed with being the on ball creator, but like, man, you could really make a team better if you just kind of
step less up. Is more, baby. Less is more.
Yes, yes. So, well, we'll see how this ends, man. Let's just get some predictions. Zach, do you think Memphis closes this out?
Yep. And if they can win this game, man, my mind's just going to explode. So I still got to go Warriors, and I'm going to say seven again. But like,
I'm going to be a man of my conviction. Yeah, I'm going to be a man of my conviction. I said Memphis is seven before the series. I'm going to stick with that. Memphis is seven.
Wow.
I thought
You on them?
No. So here's the thing. So watching the previous games, they give the Warriors a tough time regardless. Right. So that's always been their thing. I thought they would dominate the glass, but I didn't think this playoff run would be Jordan's pool ascension into stardom. Like, he's been a complete X factor to me. Like, him just dropping 30 bombs like it's nothing. Like, he's a superstar. Like, he's giving superstar production. He's going to get, I thought, like, man, 20, 25 M's, like, that price is going up. Like, guys who can score like that efficiently. Like,
is he due for a payday?
Oh yeah. He's extension eligible this coming off season. Won't kick in until the season after next.
I just don't know how there's going to be room for him to reach his full ceiling with Steph, Clay. Make fun of me for what I say. Oh, Andrew Wiggins, Jonathan Kuminga.
The word on the under is that number 11 is more than likely the odd man up.
I'd love to see it, but I'd try at the same time.
If it happens, like, if it comes to that, Clay will be moved to the bench or traded. Here come the Warriors. Here we go. 6-point game. Here we go.
Yeah. So I was going to say this. I'm picking Golden State to come back here, and I'm picking them to win the series in six. I think they come back here. Memphis wins next game. Golden State closes it out at home.
If they win tonight,
This is demoralizing. If they were up by 11. That this is demoralizing if they lose tonight.
Exactly. They don't and they don't lose these types of games. They if you let them linger, they will come back. You got to cut the head off that snake. Otherwise, it's going to bite you.
I mean, they were up 11. It's just you got to keep. You know,
the Grizzlies are 11-2 on Monday. I just read that stat. 3-0 in the playoffs in the City Edition jerseys, and 19-5 this year when Tyus Jones start.
All it takes is two threes, which they hit to cut it. I guess there's a free throw, 79-72 Memphis now. But yeah, I think Golden State comes back and wins it, and they close the series out. I also forgot to ask this, talking about Dallas and Phoenix. What do we think Jalen Brunson is going to get paid?
No more. 20-ish. I can't go over 25.
I got to go. Yep, somewhere between 20. Maybe, you know, he says this team's offering me, maybe get negotiated up to 25 based on, you know, other offers. But yeah, man, it's just the guys who perform in the playoffs, they get money. It's like that's the historical precedent. You perform with the chips down, somebody's going to pay you because that's what they want.
I will never forget Jerome James.
That's a name. See?
I think it was like 06. I think it was 07, maybe. I think it was 07. I can't remember. Spurs played the Sonics in the second round. Sonics gave them a series, and I think the Spurs won. By the way, the Sonics, if that's, you heard that right, if you're listening, if the youngins are listening, the Seattle Supersonics, they were a thing. Memphis back up 8. But he had a decent series against, like, I guess guarding like Tim Duncan or something. I forget. And he got like the MLE, the full MLE from the Knicks and never did anything else again. I'll never forget that. But
we ain't talking the MLE here.
In the playoffs. I mean, dude, for Jerome James was nobody.
No, I know. Jalen Brunson, though.
But yeah, right. No, I'm just saying to the point of playoffs getting guys paid. Like, that's one thing that always sticks with me. So. Well, all right, man.
Anything more than 23 is an overpay. Anything less is
20-23. I think maybe, you know, I don't know, if, you know, Dallas, like, you know, we love it here. You probably, maybe they throw them like 19 and the, you know, the taxes aren't the taxes low in Dallas? No state taxes.
Oh, yeah.
See, Texas, like,
that's why everybody from California is moving to Austin, Texas now.
I know. That's right. I see that. Move. That's they need to do more. So I can just get out this Bay Area traffic, man. We need to send more. Y'all.
I need to move back home as well, man, because I look at that check and I'm just like, yeah, are you kidding me? So anyways, we ran through it, man. Is there anything that you guys wanted to mention or that we didn't touch on? Zach,
you my guy. You better start showing Brandon Ingram some more love, man.
You got beef with Brandon Ingram, Zach?
No, he just
Zach doesn't talk bad about any player.
I know he doesn't, but I'm talking about the way it's just very he's missing from a lot of Zach's conversation. I'll say that.
I appreciate that. That means you're paying attention a little bit.
Yeah, I pay attention. I just saw like, I do appreciate it. I like 14 better than this guy. I like 14 better than that guy.
Zach is a classic. He's a classic hedger. He'll be like, okay. Yeah, no, he's great. Yeah. I had him 27th on my list. You know, like,
who's the best player you're taking Ingram over?
The best player I'm taking Ingram over?
Because I'm still taking Jaylen Brown.
Absolutely not. Just off of play, Ingram became probably the, as far as wing playmaking, there aren't three wings better than him playmaking in the NBA.
That's tough.
Actually. So
there aren't three.
He does everything better than Jaylen Brown besides defense. I mean, that's so I'm going to be wrong.
Jaylen's a space kid that off the ball defensively.
Right. No, I'm going to be wrong in this one, but I'm a Jaylen guy.
Okay.
But
look, he just set you up right there. I'm going to be wrong on this one, but here's my opinion, and it's not what yours is.
Jaylen's my guy.
I will always love Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown's the first NBA player who let me be a part of his workout.
Oh, that's
like, he opened a door for me. So that's dope. Like, always loved Jaylen Brown. I always loved that guy.
But hey, Kawhi was a late bloomer for playmaking. I mean, don't rule it out.
All right, I gotta get out of here. Any last thoughts? Anything we didn't cover?
Once again, man, this has been a long time coming. I appreciate you guys having me on, man. Real talk. This is
love. Glad we made it work, man. Really appreciate it.
We've been trying to do it for a minute, but this dude down here had twins, and I've been super busy.
Blaming me. He's blaming me. I'm the one that...
You and your damn kids. Maples, do you have anything you want to plug?
Nah, man. Make sure you guys, follow and subscribe to Temple of Hoop Podcast on any platform you get your podcast. That's it. Not going to take too much of your time. Appreciate you guys for having me once again, man.
Send your kids to go play for Jason, man. Go learn something. Guys got to hop
in LA. Let's play some one-on-one, man. I might have to give you a run. Maybe not, though.
I'm going to hit you up. We play a tournament down there in July. I'm going to see how far you are from our tournament. You got to come check my boys out.
Where's it at?
Garden Grove. How far are you from there?
I'm in LA. I don't know. You know how far it is from LA, roughly?
It's like 25 minutes from LAX. So I'm not
far. Yeah, that should be cool. Yeah, let me know. I'll come down. I'd love to see that.
For sure, bro.
Cool, man.
Well, Jason, take care, man.
Glad we did it. Thank you, sir. And we'll talk soon, man. Sure. Thanks. Thanks for everyone listening. Subscribe, rate, all that good stuff. And we'll be back soon.